Thanks, Blessing Zulu. Good evening, Zimbabwe. It's 17 hours 20 UTC, 7:20 p.m. in Zimbabwe on Saturday, July 2nd, 2016. You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Gibbs Dube. Here are our top stories this evening. A former senior ZAPU member says Zimbabweans should remember the late Joshua Mkapuko Nkomo for fighting for all forms of freedom in the country.
He looked at things as they are, but how they could be met better. He was aware there were problems in the country, problems in government, but that made him more determined to find out exactly how to solve those problems.
Prison inmates get certificates in tobacco production, and as usual, we'll focus on issues affecting girls and women. A former senior ZAPU member says Zimbabweans should remember the late Vice President Joshua Nkomo for fighting for all forms of freedom in the country. Lord Senda, a former senior member of ZAPU's National Executive Committee, says Nkomo, who died on July 1st, 1999, had Zimbabwe at heart. He speaks about the sacrifices of the late ZAPU leader.
He looked at things as they are, but how they could be met better. He was aware there were problems in the country, problems in government, but that made him more determined to find out exactly how to solve those problems. And in most cases, he succeeded. I know he died having not achieved everything he thought he would do for Zimbabwe. But there you are, he certainly said, there are people who worked with me, there are people going to come and work with me. And so far as our independence is concerned, we shall make it work by getting everybody to participate in those areas of things that make people develop and not merely wait to do things that are meaningless in some cases. But he was a very good visionary and determined to see that everybody, old and young, rich and poor, lived comfortably in the country of his birth and the country he fought for, Zimbabwe.
And then, Mr. Senda, what actually happened to his vision?
Our government minister has given specific duties and portfolios and the areas that they could develop better than others. And he was that kind of man who wanted to make sure if things were done properly, they should be followed. Follow up and see where they go to. Because some things are started by people, but along the line, they do not complete what they had intended to do initially. His idea was to make sure what he said and what the people said is done and followed. If not followed, why? He was that kind of visionary, a man who actually wanted everybody to have a place in Zimbabwe, to make his contribution, and so on and so forth. In other words, he was a thinker and wanted everybody to think, allowed to think perfectly for the good of the country.
Now, tell us, looking at what is happening in Zimbabwe today, let's say if Nkomo was in charge, was everything that is happening in Zimbabwe going to happen this way? Like the economy is going down and the politics is rather very complicated. What would he have done better than what is happening today?
Well, it's very difficult, my son, because to succeed in anything that government does, all the people involved must contribute intelligently so that there is no failure when they come to things that they want to do or wanted to do for the nation. And now taking Nkomo, he was the man of the people. He meant to understand their problem. And in many cases, it really worked out in such a way that his advice, his leadership was such that people could envy to copy him and to do the kind of things that make a country progress and go forward. Not merely a kind of way people, well, this is not done.
norma como
Dio chomba
norma moro
Oro imose
maka
magadine
como
Omo wetu aula
ndio
Dio chomba
norma njeyo
Dio
chomba norma Zambia.
That was Lord Senda, a former senior PF ZAPU member, speaking with Studio 7 from Bulawayo. Some inmates at Banket, Mashonaland West Province's semi-open prison have graduated in tobacco production, a move which will ensure that they are successfully reintegrated into the Zimbabwean society. The inmates joined 179 other prisoners that have benefited from the program since its inception in 2008. The program was set up by the prison services in conjunction with the Tobacco Research Board. Our correspondent Arthur Chikoriwa has more.
Speaking at the 9th graduation ceremony, Zimbabwe Prison and Correctional Services Deputy Commissioner General Moses Chiobvu appealed to government to employ the said to be released soon. Turning to the inmates, Chiobvu said they must prove the society wrong if Zimbabweans will continue calling them criminals.
Having successfully produced tobacco, the growing specialists, it is disturbing that some sectors of the community are still shrouded with some forms of discrimination. Let me also take this opportunity to urge the 15 graduates to behave professionally in their respective communities after release from prison. Society might continue to inscribe you as a permanent prisoner, but let that only exist in their minds and prove otherwise. Emancipate yourselves through the knowledge and skills that you have acquired and assume positive roles in your societies.
Chiobvu said the admission in prison doesn't signify the end of the world, but can be a way to identify one's talent.
You have been empowered with life surviving skills, which many of you never dreamt of before incarceration. Today, you have come to realize that admission into prison does not signify the end of the world, but it can be a way of locating the keys to unlock the right direction to your unpredicted destinations.
One of the prisoners, Monica Chirenje, said she is happy with the tobacco farming knowledge imparted to her. Chirenje said she is now ready to face the world.
To face the world, pregnant with the tobacco farming knowledge you invested in me for free.
An ex-convict, Matthias Mushambe, who was trained in tobacco production in 2013, said his tobacco farming knowledge spearheaded his acceptance in society. The government is not in a position to employ workers due to lack of funds. Public Service Commission Commissioner Ambassador Mary Margaret Muchada said as a result, it is unlikely that they will even be employing ex-convicts in the near future.
As it is, we are not recruiting.
The 9th graduation ceremony was the first of its kind in Mashonaland West Province. Reporting for Studio 7 in Chinoy, this is Arthur Chigoriwa.
Now it's time for the show, Girls, Youth and Development.
Hello, Zimbabwe. This is Chi Onesto Jani with Nyaradzo Mashaya Mombe, founder of Tag Alive International Trust with Talking Girls and Young Women and Development. Hello, Nyari.
Hi, Chi Onesto. How are you? Hello, Zimbabwe. Welcome to my show.
And today's topic is social media, the good and the bad. So please tell us more, Nyari.
Right, so what we would like to let Zimbabwe know is that at this point this month, we've decided to talk about the issue that has troubled or that has put many young people into good opportunities and bad luck as well, as we know that everything comes with the good and the bad. So what we're really looking at today is what has been the good that has come out of social media, what has been the bad that has come out of social media. For instance, the good that has come out of social media lately has been the issues of people being able to report or to highlight or record issues of abuse against women and young girls. For instance, I remember in 2014 where the case of the woman was shipped at 43. In that case, I was brought to light because somebody recorded it and it went viral. But also, we have also had networks like WhatsApp, Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, being places where also, again, young people and also everybody connect with everybody. And also a place where, which is a cheaper way of communicating. Right now, we don't need to pay a lot of money to talk to our relatives who are in America or who are in Zimbabwe or anywhere across the world. And people have taken these platforms to learning platforms where women and girls, men collaborate, connect, and learn with each other since the world has become so global.
With what is happening in social media, I found out that though it's coming as a good thing for all Zimbabweans out there and the international market, we're able to connect. But also you find out there's lots of abuse, especially in the areas of girls, that I have seen, like with the sex tapes that are coming out, you know, that have been coming out, especially in Zimbabwe, of late in the past 5 years, you find that there's a lot of exposure and negativity of where the women's bodies are being humiliated, they are being exposed, and people think it's funny. And yet there's so much shame, and yet a woman's body is supposed to be respected. So when I see someone, even if I don't know her, and her body's out there, and people are trying to make themselves famous by using a girl child or a young woman for the sake of prestige, then there is something wrong with that.
Most of the time, you'll see that the young women who are agreeing to being recorded in the sex tapes are people who are probably have been in relationships with these people, these men.
Well, thank you so much for a very interesting topic that you've introduced to us.
Thank you very much for having me, Chioniso. Have a good week, Zimbabwe.
Catch you later.
Thanks very much, Chioniso Chani and Nyaratso Masha Mombe of the Tech Alive International. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington. We are broadcasting on 909 meter wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
Next, an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.
Self-government, that is, a people exercising all the necessary functions of power without interference by a higher authority that they can't control themselves, is a core American value. It's also at the heart of the Declaration of Independence, which we celebrate today. Thomas Jefferson, the document's primary author, wrote that self-rule is the separate and equal station that a people are entitled to under the laws of God and nature. It didn't come easily. America's early history is marked by conflict with other countries threatened by Republican government and among Americans themselves over the ultimate form that government would take. But the Declaration laid the framework for a nation that would endure and grow, inspiring similar independence movements around the world. When war first broke out between Britain and its North American colonists, few imagined, let alone supported, the creation of a new nation. Historians note that even as the fighting raged, the colonists were deeply divided over the future. Roughly a third came to believe a complete break with Britain was needed. A third remained loyal to the British crown, and a third simply wanted to be left alone to raise their families and do their jobs. The 56 men who signed the Declaration on July 4, 1776, cast the first votes for independence. Their fellow citizens ratified the choice, and with it the then radical principle that government should be based on the consent of the governed. While this is the event and cause we celebrate today, it isn't unique to Americans. It is embodied in the constitutions of many nations and observed in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights that we all recognize. In essence, then, Independence Day is a celebration of our common humanity.
That was an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.
As usual, we now hand you over to Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahoye.
Welcome to the Women's Forum, a forum where we look at issues affecting women. I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahoye. Tonight on the Women's Forum, we're gladly joined by Martha Tolana, an AIDS activist who herself is living with HIV/AIDS. Welcome to the Women's Forum, Ms. Tolana.
Thank you, Marvelous.
Tell us about your life history. When were you diagnosed and what led you to make that decision to seek your status?
Yes, I went for testing in January 2003. At that time, there was no treatment in Zimbabwe. There were no ARVs on the public program. It was quite difficult. You could only get them in the expensive, at a very high price in private pharmacies. So when I tested and got to know my status, my CD4 count was very low. What helped me was to disclose to my family, to my relatives and to friends and colleagues. And in that way, I got help in terms of how to live positively. I also got a lot of information about the current information around HIV and how I could keep myself healthy, and also around nutrition. I had to change my lifestyle in terms of nutrition, in terms of making sure that I have enough exercise, I have enough rest, and that I had someone or a group of friends that I could talk to who were not judgmental, who could talk me through what I was going through and actually give me the support so that I would not be stressed about the condition.
How easy was it for you to disclose to your family that you had just been diagnosed with HIV/AIDS at that time?
At the time, I think the only thing that made it easy was that I thought I was dying because my CD4 count was 31. And at the time, we were being told that anyone who has a CD4 count that is below 200 has now developed full-blown AIDS. And at the time, I panicked and thought, okay, when I die, are my family going to tell people what was the problem, or are they just going to hide it and then people whisper? And I wanted it to be something that my relatives, my nephews, my nieces, my cousins knew that this is not something for newspapers and magazines, that it can happen in a family. So this was the reason for me disclosing and saying to my family, please don't whisper, just say it openly that when I die that I have HIV. That was the main reason that pushed me to disclose. Not that anyone told me to do so, but it was my own conviction to say it had to be something. If I was dying, then a lot of people needed to know that this is not something that happened in far off places, but it can happen within the family as well.
You are now working with other people living with HIV/AIDS. Tell us, what is your role? And as a woman yourself, what are you urging other women out there to do about their status and just their general well-being?
Taking responsibility for one's own health and knowing that you can do everything that anyone else who's not HIV positive can do. All the tasks, that any everyday task that one needs to do, HIV cannot be a limitation. We also teach each other around keeping ourselves healthy, adherence, making sure that you are on a balanced diet, making sure that you take care of children if they are positive, if they are negative, preventing reinfection for oneself. We also teach those who are not positive. We also talk to them around if they are negative, they should keep themselves negative, and how do they make sure that they prevent HIV infection. For those who do not know their status, it's about encouraging them and also talking to them about the only way that they will know and be able to take better responsibility is to actually get the test and know their status, and that there is always someone who will give expert counseling as they go through the HIV testing.
What about the issue of stigma? Many women fear getting tested because they are afraid of the stigma that comes with the territory. What's the situation on the ground right now?
It has improved. When people have accurate information, you find that stigma reduces. But where people do not have accurate information, stigma is quite high.
Time is not on our side. Thank you very much, Martha Tolana, an AIDS activist who's also living with HIV/AIDS, for having been our guest here on the Women's Forum, a forum where we look at issues affecting women.
Thank you very much.
I'm Marvelous Mhlanganyahuye.
Thanks very much, Marvelous Mhlanganyahuye. And that's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Chris Gande. This is Kip Stube in Washington, D.C., saying good night, Zimbabwe.